You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. If you've got questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, or anything else you can think of, you're in the right place. That's what we do. We take your calls. We answer your questions about everything trucking, about the trucking lifestyle, about what it's like to live and work on the road. And that does pose some challenges. And we're going to get to the calls and questions in just a couple minutes. Speaking of challenges, and I've been talking about this because I'm back on the road. I try to do it about 4 months out of the year. And I live and work in very similar circumstances to what you have to work in. Drive the same kind of truck, pull a trailer that's similar but a little different, about the same length. I'm about the same weight as you would be empty. And because we also have to work, run a company, do a radio show with two of us, the trailer itself is outfitted as a studio and an office. But we deal with the same stuff, fighting traffic, dealing with getting fuel and where to park and where to sleep and all those things. And this week I've got an added challenge for anybody who's tried to live in a house while it's being remodeled. You'll understand now to live in 400 square feet while it's being remodeled and work and do a radio show and stay healthy, which is one of my big goals and something I've been talking about a lot. And that's, how do you stay healthy on the road? And I can tell you that right now in the RV trailer that I do my show out of, and for the last week and probably for one more week, I have currently got, if I look through the trailer, there are four other people in this trailer remodeling. Actually, it's hard to call it remodeling at this stage because they're just tearing stuff up. So it's challenging. I've got a little spot back at the very back of the garage in the RV, just about big enough for me to stand and do the show. Hopefully, sometime next week, I'll be heading out of here and heading to Kansas City for the CMC. Speaking of which, the CMC has been sold out for really since last year. And one of the things we know, the program has grown tremendously over the years. I am so happy with that, and I just feel so blessed. When I started this program back in 2006, it was hard to get people there. I can remember, you know, doing this event. I think the smallest group might have been 8 or 9 people, and it was a 2-day event. And I didn't know if I was ever going to be able to grow it or not. And it started to grow, and then Lisa got involved and had some great ideas, and it really took off. And now we have room for 225 people. And it's 5 days long, and we sell out every year now. In fact, we sell out usually a year in advance, and we have a waiting list of a couple hundred people. Now, I'm very happy about that on one hand, and I'm frustrated on the other. That means there are a lot of people that want to come to this event, and they can't. We are going to change that. We had a contract with Harrah's, our current location. We had a 5-year contract in order to negotiate the best price, and that is coming to an end, and we are looking for a new place. Our goal is to double the size of the event, actually a little more than double. I would like to find room for 500 people and go from there. The other thing that's changed over the years, we have a lot of additional speakers. When it was 2 days, it was just me. And now we have, I'd have to sit down and count them. We could have as many as 10 additional speakers this year. People who are absolute top in their field. It's areas that I've covered in the past, but I can't cover it and do it justice the way these people can. So we heavy hitters in the industry and in general. Larry Winget, you've heard me talk about his books, one of the top speakers in the world. Larry has spoken to over 400 of the Fortune 500 companies. He's been doing speaking for 20 plus years. He's got 6 best-selling books. He is our keynote speaker every year. And it's interesting because, again, he's been in front of the biggest companies in the world, but he loves our event. He loves coming and interacting with the drivers and small business owners. And after he did the first one a couple of years ago, he told us, you tell me the dates and I will make sure I am at your event. He blocks out everything else on his calendar. We are excited about that. We have lots of other great speakers. Now, I still do a lot of the speaking. When it comes to the main meat, the stuff, I do about 2.5 days of the 5 days. And I also open and close every day. And this year, I'm really, really focusing on the opens and the closes. So if you're coming this year, be prepared. You know what you've seen in the past. This year, it's going to be even better. One of the hardest questions I get, and I don't have to answer it much anymore these days because we just don't have room at the event anyway. But people used to say, well, Kevin, if I come, what am I going to learn? That is so hard to put into words and have any real impact. Here's the thing. I mean, we spend, I'll bet it's close to 60 hours in that seminar room. How do I summarize 60 hours in 6 minutes? And if I do, it sounds like, oh, well, that's it? It's all I'm going to learn? No, it's not. You want me to summarize it, though. You're going to learn everything we can cram in about trucking. I mean, you are going to learn, you know, some of the same things we do here on the radio, but so much more in depth. You know, the tracking your numbers, reading financial statements, how to put your numbers together yourself so you don't have to pay somebody else to do it, so you understand what the numbers mean, how to use those numbers to grow your business. We do fuel mileage, we do maintenance, we do fuel tax, we do income tax, we do sales and negotiation. We do, you know, Bruce Mallinson comes in and does maintenance and engines. Mike Beckett comes in and does tires and alignment. George Gallimore does all of our sales and negotiation training. This year, we're adding, expanding your fleet, and also getting started as an owner-operator, which is a new class I'll be teaching. I'm going to be doing a lot more this year. We're going to do some breakout sessions. We will be working on rates and lanes and working with brokers. We have a big maintenance boot camp outside on Fridays where we go through all kinds of systems on the truck and how to maintain your truck well, on and on and on. And again, I just wish we had more room. We will soon, and we'll keep you informed about that. One of the things that we do that you never hear really on the radio, well, actually, there's a lot of stuff we do that you never hear on the radio. It just doesn't work as well on the radio. One of them, though, is throughout the whole week, I take people through several exercises that help them, in essence, first design their business, which is something that so few people do. They don't understand how, they don't understand the importance of it, and they are very reactive. Like, they want to be in business, but they don't really plan what that business is going to look like. So they just start doing stuff. And then they realize maybe they've done the stuff in the wrong order, or they've done the wrong stuff. They have failed to do the stuff they really should have been doing. And it's because they are reactive instead of proactive. Proactive is having a plan. And a plan means in writing. You can't keep a plan in your head. If you're that smart, that you could keep a plan in your head, you should be writing books and doing a lot of stuff. Because I'll tell you what, I've met some of the best business people in the world. And that's not an exaggeration. And they will tell you that some of the most important things they do is keep things in writing. Keep a list. Your mind cannot keep this stuff in your head. And if you think you can, you're fooling yourself. And I fooled myself for years. I thought I could. There's no way, not even close. Once I started making lists and creating plans, everything changed. And that's part of what I weave in through the whole week, is helping people write those plans. And it works well because you're there. I have a captive audience. No distractions. We have time to do it. But that's something, if you didn't get a chance, if you haven't been to the CMC, or if you haven't been lately, that one idea can change everything. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'll get phone calls. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. If you need any help from us, we have a whole team of people standing by. We call it Tribe Care, and they want to help. If you don't get through the first time, or if you don't get somebody live, they are busy. We always return calls, so either try again, or more importantly, leave a message. We'll get right back to you, and we can help you out with fuel mileage, bookkeeping, your tax return, getting started in the business, you know, ordering the parts and the products we talk about here on the show. All you have to do is give us a call or go to the website, whichever one you prefer. The website, you know, I say it all the time. The phone number, grab something to write with, is 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-FUEL. 3835. You know, and I always need to remember, sometimes I forget. I've been doing this show for 8 years now, and I just don't always realize we have new listeners every day. And I just want to say welcome to the show. I hope you stick around long enough to determine whether or not you really like it. And if you don't like it, that's okay too. It's not for everybody. But if you do, welcome. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's start off today in El Paso. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon, Kevin. Hey, couple little things. First off, real quick, how often are you supposed to change your fast filters?
Good question. You know, typically we've done it at that 20 or 15,000 mile interval. But, you know, I've seen filters clog quicker than that. If you, you know, get a bad batch of fuel, I've seen those filters last as long as 50,000 miles. One of the things
I think I'm at 75,000.
It's possible. You know, I prior to using the Fast, when I was using the exclusively using the Fuel Pro, which you could see the filter, I know that I got to 75,000 miles on that and knew it was still good because I wasn't to the top yet. One of the things I started doing, this can be a little tricky in the beginning, is I just started carrying filters and a wrench with me. And, you know, I would watch fuel mileage so closely. I was really in tune with my truck. And when I started to notice that maybe I was feeling some fuel restriction, maybe I was losing a little bit of top end, and maybe my mileage dropped a little bit, I would change the filters then, rather than put it on some random number, which either means you're going to wait too long and you're going to have restriction, or you're going to do it too soon and you're throwing away good filters.
Right. Well, that's the that was the reason for the call, is because my fuel mileage is coming up again. If you look at Lisa sent you over the fuel gauges. My, you know, as soon as I saw David and he taught me how to do the fleet air filter properly for this truck, you know, after I left his shop and went straight into a snowstorm. So that first initial fill up was horrible, but after that I've been just climbing. And
Are you heading east or west?
At the moment I'm heading I've done two fill ups since I started heading east.
Okay. Just because I was going to say, if you're heading east, you'll probably be coming by David's again sometime soon, and I'll be hanging out here till next Wednesday.
I'll see you on Saturday, 5 o'clock.
Hey, we're having a big pig roast here on Saturday.
I'm as Jewish as you can get.
All right. There'll be other food, but I'd love to see you if you stop by.
And everything's looking good on the fuel gauges. It's actually, do you remember when you guys were talking about the bottom end coming back up?
Yes.
Everything's starting to move up and look good. And I thought about this after I called. They could probably do something with the summer blend coming back into effect. But at the same time, you know me, I don't run that high up as it is, and I don't really never get too much of the winter blend as it is all year.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you stay down mostly on I-10, you're just not getting much of a winter blend at all. So I have a feeling it's more of the other stuff you're doing. You know, the little tweaks here and there, I think that's a big part of it.
Okay, and I wanted to tell you, the last time I talked to you, I was just talking to the accounting people, and they had real good news for me. And they were like, and I called you, and you said, you know, there's a chance you might get a couple bucks back, whatever. Literally 24 hours later, we get an email saying we owe $4,200.
Ouch.
It blew my mind. I just didn't know what to even say. I mean, the day before the day before it was like, you're doing great. We're going to roll everything over. The person will be fine. You'll be great. We'll be able to do this. And then the next day, is $4,200. And the way that he described it, and the reason I'm calling, is I'm not familiar with what capital gains is. That's not something it's in my repertoire for words. So he explained to me that I couldn't take the full value of my truck, and I had a three-year schedule. I'm familiar with that because I had to do that with my trailer. So, but I just wasn't, if he took the full amount, it would put a capital gains expense on my business and personal, and he said that's not good.
Okay, this is an area that can get really complicated, and if I would have to have the tax return in front of me, but remind me, I think you traded a truck in and got a different truck in 2014, right?
No, I got a third-party lease for a truck in the beginning of 2014.
And did you have a truck prior to that?
I did, but that one, I just sold that on the open market.
Okay, now it's making more sense. So, and this does get complicated. Most times, not always, but most times with trucks, people trade them in. And that changes the way we handle the tax situation. It's not good or bad. It's just different, that's all. In fact, if we do it right, selling outright and buying, you know, outright rather than trading can actually have some benefits. Nothing major, though. So it really doesn't matter which way you do it. What he's possibly talking about, and again, if I could see the numbers, it would make a little more sense for me. Did you, by any chance, sell the other truck for more than what you paid for it?
No.
Then I'm wondering why he's using, a lot of people, even tax preparers, use the term capital gain when it isn't truly a capital gain. In order to have a capital gain, you really need to sell an item for more than what you originally paid for it. For example, stocks. You know, many times we have capital gains on stocks. We buy them at one price, they gain value, the stock goes up, and then when we sell it, we have a capital gain. We gained money because we sold something for more than we originally paid for it.
I don't even think I showed the fact that I sold the truck just because it was broken down, and I don't think the second truck has anything to do with, or my initial first truck has anything to do with anything. He just, but I could be wrong, but I don't even think I showed it. I just, it was just a cash. It was just a cash deal.
If he's talking capital gain, you had to have sold something.
No, nothing. That's why I was confused. That's why the one day me and Lori were happy as hell, thinking that we're gonna, you know. We're only $3,500 in our personal debt, and we were thinking, great, you know, if we get a couple grand back, we'll be out of debt. The next day, we doubled our debt.
Yeah, something.
It was a beautiful 24 hours.
Sense then, because again, it really the only way to have a capital gain is to sell something: stocks, a house, business equipment, whatever it might be.
Nothing at all, man. We didn't sell.
Right. So when are they going to have the return back to you?
It's probably back. I mean, we owe the money April 15th.
Right. If there is a digital copy, a PDF copy of the return, something that you could email to me, I'll look it over.
Just call Marcus or get a hold of Marcus.
Okay. I can do that. I need to talk with him today anyway, so I'll check with him and get a clarification. You know, and I've said this 1,000 times, this is what I hate about our tax system. It's so crazy complicated that this is going to turn out more than likely to be correct. Just I'm not thinking of some other possibility that's happened in your tax picture because there's so many of them. That's why when I'm talking about taxes or answering questions, I usually have to answer very generally, unless I've got the tax return in front of me. If I can see all 37 pages and 300 lines of the tax return, then I can usually figure it out. Otherwise, I'm just shooting in the dark.
Right. Well, it just didn't make sense to me. I'm not arguing with the guys. I mean, they're really smart and they're real intelligent on the tax code and everything going on. It's just from one day being everything's okay to the next day, the word capital gain and $4,200 being owed, I just didn't understand.
Yeah, and you may never understand, and that's my whole problem with our tax system, is that the average person is responsible for their tax return, responsible to pay the money, but the system's too complicated for them to understand. And that's a shame. It should not be that way. That's why we need a fair tax. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I want to get right back to the phone calls. Let's head off to Iowa. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing great. What can I help you with today?
First of all, I want to thank you and your team for answering most of my emails, because after 3 years of being your own operator, I'm still learning things and just, you know, were pertinent certain items in certain categories. So I want to thank your team for helping me out on a lot of that stuff.
Good. I'm glad they're there for you. That's the plan. We want to make the bookkeeping process as easy as possible because we want people to do it and understand how important it is.
Agreed. And I'm still, you know, getting a grasp on all my numbers. But I'm slowly learning. But right now, I'd like to see, get your opinion on how my 2014 is doing, being okay. A contract driver with everyone else.
Excellent. All right. So we're looking at the entire year of 2014, which is a great thing to do. You know, we look at our numbers every month, depending on how familiar with them you want to be. Now, we only, in our accounting system, you only have to do your numbers once a month. That doesn't mean you can't go in and look at them as often as you want. Now, right. In my business, which is a little more complicated, I literally, it is my morning habit. Habits are something I've been talking a lot about. It's my morning habit while I'm drinking my first cup of coffee. I just open up my numbers literally every day and look to see what's going on. One of the reasons I do that now is because I don't do the numbers anymore. You know, and I've been telling people that for years, do your own numbers. That way you'll understand them. And I think you're starting to see that now. But then you get to a point, the business is big enough, I just can't. I mean, our accounting now is literally a full-time job. And I have somebody who does that. But in order to stay familiar with those numbers, I look at them every single day. And nothing would stop you from going in, even though you only have to do them once a month, going in once or twice a week and looking at different parts. So let's do that now. We're looking at the business report for the whole year. And I'm going to venture a guess that you are leased to a carrier.
I am.
Okay. And I'm going to go a little bit further and say you're on a mileage contract with the fuel surcharge.
As usual, you're right again.
Okay. And that's not magic, and the report doesn't tell us that, but the numbers do. You know, I know what people were doing last year on percentage contracts, and I know what people were doing on mileage contracts. And revenue-wise, you're right where I would expect somebody to be on a mileage contract with the fuel surcharge, $1.33 all miles. Now, I will say that poses a challenge. In my opinion, the rates on mileage contracts are lagging way behind in a lot of ways. The freight rates have gone up, so people on percentage contracts have seen their revenue go up. The carriers are seeing their revenue go up. They're very, very slow in passing it along on their mileage contracts. So that's one issue. The other thing is that everything else we pay for has gotten more expensive. Now, fuel went down, but our fuel surcharge goes right down with it. So that's a wash. The fuel price shouldn't really affect your operation much unless you're getting either really good fuel economy or really bad. And then it's going to affect you one way or the other. But maintenance costs have gone up, tire costs have gone up, taxes have gone up, and it is a challenge to work, I believe, under those old contract rates. But looking ahead, we're not there yet, but I jumped ahead. You're doing a very good job of it, and we'll see that by the time we get to the bottom line. You either have a very, very small truck loan or you paid it off sometime during the year.
As a matter of fact, I got my truck paid off 3 months early, beginning of the year.
Congratulations. That helps keep your fixed cost very low. And here's another thing. Being leased to a carrier, this is the good side. Your fixed cost, you know, your insurance and tax and license is only 5 cents a mile. Your truck loan only added another penny a mile since you got it paid off early. So 6 cents a mile for total fixed cost. That is excellent. Now we go to the variable cost. Fuel. This is always the first one we get. And I didn't go into your fuel gauges account. What is the current fuel mileage on your truck? Like last 90 days or actually, what was a good number for an average for you last year?
Last entry I put in the gauges, I think I was pushing around, like right now it's like 5.4, but slowly going back up.
Okay. And I thought, and that's why I was questioning this, because your fuel cost is very high, even by 2014 standards. And most 2014, we had higher fuel prices than we have right now. You were at 62 cents a mile. We really try to get people down in the low 50s. And now we're seeing people in the low 40s. And I had somebody, I believe, sometime this week that was at like 36. But again, that was last month and fuel prices were much lower. But 62 is high. So, and here's why we go through these numbers. There's very little you can do about your revenue other than look at a whole different business model, but we won't go there yet. So revenue, we can kind of ignore. Your fixed costs are as low as they're ever going to get, so we don't have to pay attention to those. So where do you put your time? Well, the number just jumped out at us. You should be focusing the majority of your time and effort on fuel mileage, because there is a huge opportunity here for you to put another 10 to 12 cents a mile back in your pocket. Maintenance cost, I wouldn't sweat it too much. You're at 14 cents. You know, you would have to really invest some money and put quite a bit of work to get it down to 10. And I doubt that we're going to see it get much lower than that. So, you know, many of the good news is many of the things you'll do for fuel economy may also help lower your maintenance costs some. So you'll get the double whammy there in a good way. So if we go to the bottom line, we see that your revenue is $1.33. When we add up all of your expenses, it was 86 cents, which is actually a good number. And it leaves you 47 cents a mile, much more than you'd make driving most company trucks. And you have the beauty of, you know, it's your business. You get to decide what you want to do. And we also know that you could add 13 cents a mile to that. And that would be my goal for you for 2015, is to get that 47 cent bottom line to 60, and you can do it.
And that was one of my main questions was, you know, one of your previous episodes, you're asking the drivers, you know, to try to find a goal of, you know, getting their net profit up. And as a lease contract driver, I was trying to figure out, just taking everything they throw at me, I was trying to sort of scratch my head on how I could, you know, try to bring that number up a little bit.
Well, fuel mileage is where I would focus all your energy. Really, I would eat, sleep, breathe, and live fuel economy right now. Every extra dollar would go towards fuel mileage upgrades. And here's the thing. Once you get that number in line, and if we got 60, then you've got to look at the reality of things. And this is totally a personal decision. I wouldn't even ask anybody else about this. If you get your bottom line to 60, you've about maxed out your opportunities at that company. Unless they offer another program where you can do a percentage or something like that. If you do get to 60, and again, this is the beauty of the numbers. You have a goal to shoot for. And as long as you're not at 60, you've still got something to work on. Once you get to 60, then you can either say, you know what? I really like this company. I like what I do every day. I know I've probably got my bottom line about as tight as it's going to get, and I'm okay with that. I'm happy. Or you wow, that was fun. I've got this extra money. I can see it, but I don't want to quit. What else can I do? And at that point, you would have to start looking at other business opportunities.
Sure. Cool. Yeah, because my main thing, you know, I've been, you know, a mileage, you know, driver, you know, for almost 20 years. And so I've thought about, you know, like Landstar, places like that. But, you know, just trying to get my mind wrapped around, you know, the being a percentage, you know, going a percentage, like, I'm not sure if I, you know, totally understanding that stuff.
Well, those are always questions I can help you with. You know, we cover a lot of that kind of stuff at the CMC. I don't get to do it as much on this show as ever. We do talk about it more on our other podcast shows. But you've got some work you can do here, and this isn't a decision you have to make lightly or in a hurry. It's something you start getting in writing and start gathering information about. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, a real quick heads up. We're heading into the fourth segment. At the end, I'll say I'm done. I've got to get out of here. Good night, all that stuff. Don't go away. We're going to come back and do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. You know, that last call is such a great example of the importance and the beauty of having the numbers. You know, I talked in the beginning about the difference between being reactive, which is what most people are, and being proactive, which will change your life. When you have the numbers, you know what to do. When you have the numbers and you keep learning, then you really know what to do. That indecision goes away. Most people are reactive because they don't know what to do to be proactive. Two things that can really help, and that's why I hammer on these things all the time. Continue learning. Keep listening to books. You should be listening to at least one book a week if you are a driver. And one book a week will put you in the top 1% of our society as far as learning. If you're really ambitious, it's not out of the question to do 3 or 4 books a week. On the road right now, I'm averaging a book every 2 days being on the road because I love listening. I love learning. And boy, do I have a lot of time when I'm driving. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's head off to Idaho. Johnny, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Fair Tax Now.
Absolutely. What's on your mind?
Since you mentioned audiobooks, that's a life-changing thing that you gave me from your show, audiobooks.
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it?
It's pretty amazing. All right, my question is, I thought I knew, but I get total opposite answers, and then I read, and now I don't know. How does the rear ends work on a 6x4 with the power divider?
Got it. Now, and trust me, I got so many different answers over the years, and people would always have some way of proving what they thought to be true. Oh, if you jack it up and you turn this wheel, then this happens. So that proves that what I said is right. But then other people would say, but when you get stuck, this happens, so this proves that I'm right. And
right. Finally
said, wait a minute. Somebody knows this, and if anybody knows it, it's the engineers that build the rear ends. So I've got great contacts with the OEMs. Why don't I go find an engineer and sit down, and I am not going to let that guy out of the room until he explains to me what is going on. So I did. And it's like most things. Once you get the right explanation in the right way, it starts to get pretty clear. So first of all, let's talk about there are 3 components on a 6x4. You have 2 differentials, the front differential and the rear differential. And for people, let's go way back to the beginning. When we talk about a differential, if you stand at the back of your truck looking straight towards your truck, and you see the big round ball. We're going to get really basic here. Got your 2 tires. Uh-huh. You've got that big round ball there. Some people call it a pumpkin. That is the differential. That is where the gears are in your axle. Now, We also have what's called a power divider between the 2 axles. The good news is, though, that power divider is just another differential. It works the exact same way. So once we understand how they work, we know how they all work. Let's talk about
the question. I have a question now.
Go ahead.
I, the power dividers between the two axles. I thought it was right in front of the front.
Physically, it is a part of the forward differential. I guess when I, in my mind, and the reason I explain it as being in between the two is that's where it works, is between the two. It distributes power between the two. But that's a good point if you're physically looking at the truck. And there are actually a couple different designs. But
I just know my truck has it in the front. So we were making things simple, and
that's right.
It's in the front.
Good point. So let's talk about just one axle right now and one differential. So one of the things that helps is if we understand why we even need a differential. So imagine that axle sitting on the ground and imagine it trying to go around a corner. Now, if it were a solid axle, the inside tire on the corner is going to travel a lot less of a distance than the outside of the axle. And if it were solid, it couldn't do that without like jumping and skipping and doing all kinds of weird things. So we need something that can make one of the set of wheels or one wheel end turn at a different rate than the other one turns at. It can't be a solid axle. That's what the differential does. Now, in order to make that happen, though, the differential actually has to make more power go to the wheel that has the least amount of traction. So it seems backwards when we get stuck because we have a wheel that has traction and we have a wheel that has no traction. It might be sticking up in the air. It might be on ice. And the one with no traction is the one that keeps spinning. So it can't get us out.
That's why locking differential on a pickup's good because you get both spinning. Yeah.
Exactly. That is a great example. And then if you try to go around a corner with that axle locked in, you'll understand what we're talking about. But as long as we're going in a straight line and we want the maximum traction, we can lock those two axles together. And when I say two axles, I mean two axle ends. We're just still talking about one axle here. So that's what the differential does. It allows the axle to go around corners smoothly. It's not very good for getting us out of a sticky spot when, you know, we don't have the same amount of traction on both wheels. So now we know what the one differential does. The forward differential does the exact same thing. So people say, well, no, it must always send more power to the right side because my right wheel wears out faster. It might, but that's not how it works. We can't even say which wheel it's sending more power to. It changes constantly. Literally, every second it's changing based on the road conditions and the size of your tires and all kinds of things. Now, the power divider. When the power divider is unlocked, meaning the way we normally drive the truck down the road, now what it is doing is acting exactly like a differential. It is sending power to the axle with the least amount of traction. And technically, if we're going down the road straight, it should be sending about 50% of power to both axles. Now, many people believe it only sends power to the rear axle.
Okay, that's my question. I've had people that I think should know the answer say, nope, the front drive it when the power divider's out, unengaged.
Right.
And then, then you get the exact opposite. No, it's the rear. So it's both.
It's both all the time in different amounts based on traction and tire size. If you have a differential in tire size, that the differential up for that difference in tire size because it will run two axles at two different speeds so that the truck goes down the road nice and smooth. That's why you can have you could have tires on the front axle that are 6/32 smaller than the rear axle or vice versa, and the power divider will make up for it. Now, here's another thing a lot of people don't understand, and you will get tons of argument about this. remember how if we locked in an axle, a locking differential, you're going to know it when you try to go around a corner. It's going to jump and hop and do all kinds of weird things. But if you lock in your power divider, it's no big deal.
It's and almost like it does nothing to me when I lock in my power divider sometimes.
It does very little. Well, here's what it does. What the little bit of difference it was making, or when it's unlocked, it now is not making up that difference anymore. So now we are locking those two axles together and making them run at the same speed. So if you had a difference in tire size, now you would put a pretty big load on that power divider itself, and it's going to run hot. You're going to use more fuel. But let's say you had all of your tires really well matched. Locking in the power divider is not going to make much difference at all. You will have some other gears turning, which will cut down. I know heavy haul guys who literally run all the time with their power divider locked in. Mm-hmm. So it's not, people say, oh my God, you're going to burn everything up. No, you're really not. If you had a big difference in tire size, it wouldn't be good. And it's not something you want to do on a regular basis because we don't need to. But it doesn't hurt nearly as much as what. So hopefully, because the music's playing, I gave you a better understanding of what's going on.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Lots and lots of confusion about that, and you will get people that will argue to the death about how that whole system works. Hopefully, I helped clarify a few things. I was under some misassumptions for years and years as well, till I asked the people who knew. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show, it's all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about everything trucking and the trucking lifestyle. So any question you can think of, give me a call. I'll do my best to answer it. It could be about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, getting started in the business, you name it, living on the road, staying healthy on the road, whatever it might be. I'll do my best to get you an answer. If I don't have it, many times one of the other listeners will jump in and help us out. I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to get right to the phone calls and see how many we can get through tonight. Let's start off in Wisconsin. Nick, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. How's it going today?
Going good. What can I help you with today?
I've got kind of a convoluted mess I wanted to see if maybe you can help me see through here. I went from being a leased on owner operator to my own authority. I was pulling a grain trailer. I had a 2011 hopper bottom, and I decided I wanted to try something different, so I bought a flatbed. I worked out a deal with the salesman for $15,000. I drove over to get it. Was not what I wanted, but I had already made commitments to haul loads, so I had to have a trailer, so I took it. I did get it down to $12,000 on it. But now this is kind of out of the blue. My hopper was sitting, and somebody wanted to know if I wanted to sell it, and I wasn't really trying to, but it is kind of a lot of money to just have sitting there doing nothing, so I did. And now I've got $30,000. My tax guy says, if I just keep it, I'm going to have to pay 10 of it back in taxes. I could buy a new trailer, a new flatbed, but I've got this other one, and I'm not upside down on it on what I owe, but I've got a lot of money invested in it. I ended up putting a new fifth wheel in it, plate under it, new ABS. I'm just putting four new tires on it, and okay. I'm just kind of not sure what direction to go. I've got that money that I've got a year to figure out what to do with it.
Okay. And this is a great question. I'm glad you're asking this. And, you know, I don't want to tell you not to take advice from your tax guy, but I'm glad you're asking because tax people focus on one thing, which is what they should focus on. That's what we hire them for, taxes. But we also have to understand business and money. And one of the ways I help clarify this for people is by asking you, why did you get into business? And I'll even help you. We'll make it multiple choice so this goes real quick. Did you get into business, A, to make money and have more control over your own life, or B, to pay less taxes?
A, I wanted to own a truck. You really want to know the truth. Way back when, 10 years ago.
Nobody sits around and says, I'm going to start a business so I can pay less tax.
Right.
That's insane. But yet, once we get into business, if we listen exclusively to our tax people, sometimes that's all they think about. Well, this is a good example. He says you have $30,000, and if you don't spend it, you're going to owe $10,000 in tax. That is true. But let's think about this. Let's say you just do nothing. If you do nothing, you will still have $20,000 in your pocket.
Right.
If you go out and spend enough money in order to wipe out the $10,000 in tax, how much cash do you have left?
None, because you're making payments again.
None. That's right.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's better to say, yeah, the tax system is the tax system. I owe the money, but I could pay the money and just I'll have $20,000 in my hand.
Right.
So
I'm torn because I have, well, I always kind of believe that the best value is the new trailer just because I don't have a shop. I can work. I do a lot of my own work. I can work on it outside, but up here in the winter, it's miserable to work outside, obviously. And a trailer is, you know, I've always had newer trailers, and I've gotten along pretty well. I didn't want to invest that kind of money in this flatbed because I didn't know if I would like the business, but I love it. It's great.
And, I think there's a tremendous amount of value in used equipment as well, and I buy new, but there are times when I buy used. And you know, the one thing we can look at is just to give one example, if a lot of times I'll buy things that are 1 or 2 years old. Because that's when the biggest hit happens in the price. People call it depreciation, call it whatever you want, but that's when the big hit happens in the price. I think sometimes those 1 and 2 year old items are at the absolute best value.
Okay, sure. And so that's kind of, it goes along. Okay, so I've got this other trailer now. I don't need two trailers. And we did take some depreciation out of it this year in tax. But I only paid $12,000 for it. So it's not like I got a lot of money either way in that, but I've got $30,000 from this other trailer, and I've got I'm guessing somewhere around a $15,000 trailer. And you know, I'm right with you on the old truck. I've got an 03 Peterbilt. I've had it forever. It's a great truck. I love it. I know it's not the aerodynamic stuff, but anyway, I can work on it. I don't need somebody's laptop to tell me what's wrong with it. But the trailer, I just wonder if the same rules apply or am I better off? You know, I mean,
I bought it
for 12. I stuck 1500 in the fifth wheel, 1000 in tires now, 600 in ABS. It's probably going to be $3,000 in paint if I sandblast and paint it. You know, honestly, it's just an old flatbed. What's really to go wrong with it, too?
That was going to be my point. So you put a little bit of rust out. Between now and the next 5 years, how much more are you going to put into it? Hardly nothing. And if it's like flat bedding, it's working good, it's making you money, I can't see any reason to move away from this trailer. I think you've done great in the decisions you've made so far.
Okay. All right. Well, good. I was just really torn which way to go. And I want to have nice stuff, but it doesn't have to be new. You know, that kind of like what you were talking about yesterday with the 5-year thing. You know, it doesn't have to be new. I'm not afraid to fix it. I just want it to be nice and not have problems on the road.
Yep. And you're already heading there, and you've done it with literally half the money you would have spent on a new trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, all right. Well, good. That kind of, you know, makes me feel better about where I'm going then with that.
Good.
So, yeah. And then I guess I did tell, I believe that was Lisa I talked to earlier on the, if you wanted to look at my profit gauges, I just started as with my own authority in October, but I just started with, I started with my own authority over a year ago, but I just started with the flatbed in October. And
I've got a business report here. It's February. It's 1 month. And I always look at 1 month, but it also pays to look at bigger periods to see trends. Mm-hmm. Always going over your numbers makes sense. And I can tell you this, I'm not going to take a ton of time on it, but you are doing really well on your own authority. $1.96 all miles, which is excellent. Your fixed cost is only 12 cents a mile. Your fuel cost is 41. I was just talking to somebody that was at 63. So, and 63 was all of last year. I don't want to beat him up too bad because we were talking about fuel was much higher. 41 is outstanding. Your maintenance cost at 24, which is high, but we know that you've been putting work into older equipment, which makes sense. The good news is we get down to the bottom line, and this is another one of those that, you know, 5 years ago, you would have been in the top 0.5% in the industry. You are taking home over $1 a mile. If we look at this 1 month, that is that is really awesome. And I'm seeing more and more of that, and I am absolutely loving it. Now, let's think about that number for a second. And this is why I love numbers. If we can get somebody to $1 a mile, the math becomes real easy. If I run 120,000 miles a year, I make $120,000 net in your pocket to drive a truck, to own a business and drive a truck. That's pretty darn hard to beat. Or you could say, hell, if I can make $1 a mile, I'm just going to run 80,000 miles a year, make $80,000 and enjoy life some. Great options. I love that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. I'm going to head off to Arkansas. John, welcome to the program.
Yes, Kevin. I changed my truck over to a 6x2 system back in about Thanksgiving area, and I was not going to put a lift or anything on it until I got into some docks that was pretty bad, and I had to end up making it to where I quit being stuck, so I put a dump on the back axle, and that allowed me to be able to get in and get the load off of the back axle and onto the front to give the traction I needed to lock in my front axle. Now,
right.
The thing I'm calling about is the other night I was running, and I just assumed that by lifting an axle or dumping it and pulling the weight off, that I should be able to increase my fuel mileage. Well, I didn't. What happened was I dropped my fuel mileage by about 0.2 on my scan gauge. And what I was wondering is what I'm seeing is the difference between the rolling resistance of the front and the rear tires. Because on the front, I have XDN2s. Now, I know them are not the best for rolling resistance, but they are the best for getting off that dock. And the thing is, when I lift the back axle, which has the super single X1 line, I end up picking up dropping my mileage. Is that because of the rolling resistance of that front tire? Now I'm putting the weight that's that reefer on top of just them front tires, which picks up the drag versus having all of them down.
You are, boy, I as you were talking, I just came up with about 15 things I wanted. You are on the right track, and I believe that is part of it, but we don't have enough testing to know for sure. But what you are thinking makes sense. And I'm going to throw out some numbers that I don't have testing on, but I believe that they're true. If we have all four wheel positions on the ground, I'm not going to say tires because if you had duals, it'd be 8, but wheel positions. If we have all four wheel positions on the ground, let's call that 100% of our rolling resistance, and we could calculate the number. Are you with me so far?
Yes, sir. That's what I think.
Yeah. Now, if we lift one of those axles, front or back, doesn't matter, we don't cut our rolling resistance in half. What we do, I think we get it by about 20 to 25%. We do get two more wheels off the ground or two more wheel positions off the ground, but we also have put more weight on the other axle that's left, which will increase rolling resist that axle. And that, I know that's what you're thinking, and I think you are correct. We just don't know the overall effect, but I think you're on the right track. Now, before I go to the next point, let me stay on tires for a second. The XDN2s, if you are running them because you believe they're going to give you that much more traction coming out of that hole, I think you're going to find that you're wrong. I think you're going to find almost any tire you put on that axle will give you the same amount of traction in most cases. So keeping that in mind going forward, if fuel mileage is important, get a lower rolling resistance tire. And now that you have the dump, I don't think you're going to see that you get stuck any more often. That's a side point. I think there's another factor here when you get that around. And I'm winging it here. But I think there is also an aerodynamic effect. And I don't know exactly what it is, but I have a feeling that there is a change in aerodynamics that isn't positive, that it's a negative effect on aerodynamics. Testing that would be difficult. But and one of the reasons that this is in my mind right now is because of our new product, the Flow Below, which is the fairings between the two differentials and the fairings behind. I would love to test that theory to see if the Flow Below would minimize this difference. Now, there are a couple things. I think we need to, you need to do this a little longer just to verify that this is a real result and it's consistent over time. It could actually get a little worse, could get a little better the more time you do it. But I would be willing to make you an offer. Now, I'm going to have to there are other owners in this company, and I, you know, can't be making offers without talking to them. But here's my thought. If you are, it sounds to me like you're really interested in fuel economy. You're into this stuff. You get it. You understand it.
Yeah. The
I would be willing.
The only reason I'm running the XDN2s is I had them, and they got a lot of tread. I'm looking at a brand new set.
Got it. So here's what I would be willing to do it sometime in the future, whenever you think about this and get back to us. I would be willing, if you were to buy the Flow Below system and it didn't fix this problem, I would buy it back from you.
That sounds like a fair deal. Like I say, I'm getting ready. The reason I'm really concerned about it or thinking about it is because I'm going to put trailer tires on that rear axle. And
right.
I'm going to put a set of Bridgestone 710 Ecopias, or however you pronounce that, on that front, because that's my best buy that I can
Good.
Get. I'm working okay. on a new dealer right now, and I'm kind of a hammer because I want to make sure this deal I make with him is more of a long-term relationship with the dealer instead of just I bought them from him and I'm out of there and gone. And
yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a good deal. I'd like to wait and get the new tires on and test that the way it is now and go ahead and put that lift that I'm going to build on it. And that
yep.
way I've got all the numbers on that because I run fairly regular the same stuff and always either totally empty or 80,000 pounds. So I could pretty much get some good numbers on it. And
Excellent.
Be able to see how much that does affect.
Excellent. I think you are thinking about this exactly right. I love the way you're going to do this and test it. I like the tires you're looking at. So no obligation whatsoever. That offer's out there. I would like to test that theory. And we'll do it so that there's absolutely no risk to you. If it doesn't work out, if I'm wrong about the aerodynamic part, and you didn't want the system, we would buy it back from you at full price. And then I'll either use it somewhere or I'll sell it to somebody else as a discounted system, but it would be worth it for me to see those numbers. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Cody, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin.
What's on your mind today?
I like all the Larry Wyatt books, and I like that, you know, when you're learning something and it's not just boring, you know, he makes it very entertaining. So I was looking for a book recommendation of books that are similar like that, you know, not just boring business books that would help me out, but ones that are entertaining as well.
Oh, boy, you would ask me the one question about books I don't think anybody's ever asked me before. There are a couple authors out there that have somewhat tried to copy Larry's style. I just wasn't very impressed with their books. So I don't want to recommend those. There's too many good books to recommend a mediocre book. Entertaining and business, and boy, the king of that style, I'll tell you. What books of Larry's have you read so far?
All of them, aside from the one about your kids are your own fault. Because I don't have kids, so I didn't think that was relevant.
Yeah. No, good point, because it is all about kids. So, you have stumped me. This doesn't happen very often. Most business...
You're always talking about books. I thought you'd be able to knock this one out of the park.
Well, yeah. I'm just really... It kind of stumped me because I'm not remembering anybody who is really that entertaining. Now, there's a couple different ways we can think about this. Larry is almost funny, entertaining, in your face, that kind of thing. I'm not thinking of... I just can't think of anybody else like that. But let me... Have you ever listened to anything by Anthony Robbins?
I have not, no.
He's not funny at all. But he is really, really easy to listen to. Like, I just want more and more all the time. So, in a way, entertaining. Now, there are some other books that aren't funny, but the information is so unusual and so out there that I find those entertaining. And one of those books, you know what? The music's playing. I don't want to rush this because I need to think that through for a second. Let me put you on hold. I'm going to come right back to you. I've got two in mind, and I'll explain them when I get back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I was talking with Cody in Pennsylvania. Cody, you still with me?
Yep, I'm here.
All right. So let's one of the books that I will say entertaining might not be the right word, but it's a long book, but the first half of it I was mesmerized because it was information that I really hadn't heard put in a way I hadn't heard any other way. Then the last half of the book is almost the opposite. It was mind-numbing with too many statistics. The book's called The World is Flat. And it talks about how our economy has changed because, you know, we used to have such a huge advantage in business in the U.S., because this is where business was and the resources were here. But now, even third world countries. I mean, I have worked on projects. I have given projects to people who are in the Philippines and, you know, where people don't make $20 a day. And I've paid people $30 an hour to do work for me that could be done digitally. And that's really what the book kind of talks about, how the playing field, the world has been made flat and level because of technology. I think it's and it's been out a while, but I think it is an amazing book. The other one that I think is wildly entertaining is called Freakonomics. And what Freakonomics does is take boring economic statistics and turn them upside down and give us totally different explanations for what we think was happening. But they use these boring numbers to prove these other concepts. And the book has led to a radio show and a blog, and it just keeps growing. If you like it, you can listen to their podcast. But that one, that is a book I found really entertaining. Let me throw out one more. Before I give you this one, and I know sometimes politics can be a little uncomfortable to talk about. Do you tend to lean Republican, Democrat, or Libertarian?
I'd say somewhere in the middle. I have some views of every political side.
Which honestly, if you haven't really taken a good hard look at libertarian, that might be what you're talking about. And let me explain real quick. I am very fiscally, meaning money, fiscally conservative. I believe in very small government. I don't believe in government programs, and I don't believe in government the way it is today, big, trying to take over everything. I believe in a very constitutional small government. On the other hand, if we're talking about social issues, I am very liberal. So I'm conservative when it comes to government money. I'm very liberal when it comes to social policies. I don't believe it's my place. I don't believe it's my place to tell anybody else how to live. And it's certainly not our government's place to tell us how to live. Our government is here partly to protect us from the rule of law. You know, you can't come take over my property by force because the government isn't going to allow you to. We have laws against that, protection we need. But as a government or any other group, you shouldn't be able to come tell me how I'm going to live if I'm not hurting anybody else. And I, you know, libertarians will even take that to an extreme. Drugs should just be legal. Now, if I take drugs and then my behavior hurts somebody else, I need to be held responsible for that. But if I take drugs and the only person I'm hurting is me, then where's the problem? It's my life,
that's
my choice.
Not anyone else's.
Exactly. So that's kind of the nutshell of a libertarian. If you think that is interesting, then listen to some books by Neil Bortz. He was a talk show host for 30 some years, maybe even 40 years. But he didn't get real, real big nationwide. Towards the end, I think he might have made it up to number five or four, maybe even. He was big in the Atlanta market and a couple others. But he's got he's also the guy who wrote the fair tax books. Big, big proponent of the fair tax. But is the first book I would recommend from him is called Somebody's Gotta Say It.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks a lot for the recommendations there.
You're welcome.
If you had a second, I also had a problem with my fast fuel system. I don't know how much time you have left there.
I can give you 30 or 40 seconds, and that might be all I have. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm having a problem after I refill my tanks. I'm overflowing on my left tank, and then as soon as it burps out a little bit, I take the cap off, a bunch of air bubbles come up, screw the cap back on. Both of them drain evenly for the rest of the drive until I'm empty. But right off the bat, right after filling up, it pushes too much fuel to the left tank.
How long have you had the FAS on?
About a year, and it's only started up in the last month.
Yeah, it probably doesn't have anything to do with the FAS itself because they're so far apart. This could be a clogged vent. It could be a bad crossover valve. This is one of those issues that every time I get this call, it turns out to be something different. There's a troubleshooting process. You're just going to have to start at the tanks and start working forward and checking the different valves and junctions. Let's go to Illinois. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you today?
Good. What can you do with?
Well, we just switched over to be a S corporation this year.
Okay.
And I'm a little bit confused as to where to enter all this payroll stuff in profit gauges. I'm looking at the wages area.
Okay.
We've got per diem, and we've got some payroll taxes, and we've got the payroll taxes we have to match, and a salary. Just wondering what to call them and where to put them.
The good news is there aren't any absolute right or wrongs. Now, that's in my world of bookkeeping. And I take a lot of flack over this from people who have been trained in accounting. But you know what? My way really works. I care about results. I am not formally trained in much of anything. I'm very informally trained and self-taught. And I just focus on results, not always rules. So, but there are some things we can do here that will make this work well for you. I like to keep things simple. Your payroll is really, it's all your money anyway. So if we wanted to keep this simple, I'll give you two ways. If we wanted to keep it as simple as possible, you could enter all of the wages and all the taxes under wages and be done with it. That's the really simple way. If you wanted to know right down to the penny your net profit, then the taxes would make more sense to put in tax. So you could take your payroll taxes, take the tax section of profit gauges, and create a subcategory. And have you ever done that yet, created subcategories?
Yes.
Okay. Same thing here. You're just going to create a subcategory under taxes, call it payroll taxes. That way, if you ever want to look at that number separate from things like fuel tax, you could. So you're going to put your wages under wages, create a subcategory for fuel tax. Per diem, just throw it into the monthly per diem amount, just like you would if you weren't an S-Corp. And seems like you mentioned something else. What else was there?
Covered it. If I can have one follow-up question.
Sure.
The accountant was telling me that we only need to cut ourselves 4 checks a year. We can do this quarterly. It'll make his job easier and a little bit cheaper on our end. Is that
is correct. Yep, that is correct. The IRS can't tell us how often we pay employees, including ourselves. We can pay on whatever schedule we want. Now, we get locked into this mindset because most employees want to get paid as often as possible. So a lot of jobs pay every week. Management jobs sometimes pay, you know, twice a month. Some management jobs only pay once a month, but nobody can tell us that we can't pay ourselves just once a quarter. And when you run your own S-Corp, like you said, simplifies things, makes the accountant's job easier, and keeps costs down.
Okay. All right. Very good. Yeah, it's definitely a difference doing this S-Corp thing. I'm trying to find out, you know, what's the least that I can pay myself instead of the typical employee mindset of what's the most I can make.
Exactly. We try to get away with paying the least amount we can in wages because that maximizes our tax savings on the dividends. And there's no right answer. You know, the IRS has one thought. We have another. Every accountant thinks about it differently. It's good to have a good relationship with your tax preparer and let them help you make that decision, which it sounds like you're doing. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. I'm going to head off to New Mexico. Byron, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing today?
Doing wonderful. What can I help you with?
Well, I've got an oil report I'd like you to look at. I've been chasing down, you can see there probably from it, some potassium and sodium.
Yeah, hold on one second, because I am having a strange occurrence on my end. Every time I try to open your oil sample that Lisa sent me, I'm getting a business report instead. So while I am trying to talk and type, and if you notice, I can't do two things at once, I will see if we can get that back, and tell me a little bit about the truck. First off, what year and what engine?
Well, I've got a 97 FLD 120. I've got a Cat C12 in it, and I've got 2 million miles, well over 2 million miles on the truck now. I've got about 600,000-700,000 on the rebuild.
Okay. Now, is that's just one rebuild?
Yeah.
Wow, boy, have you gotten your money's worth out of this thing? What? That's a great story. I love that. And
I paid $11,000 for it over 1 million miles ago. So,
wow.
You know, it doesn't owe me anything, you know.
Wow, that is amazing. All right, so Lisa got it right over to me. I am looking at it now. 15,000 miles currently on the oil. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I've been, when I started seeing the potassium, I switched off of the synthetic and went to just a mineral. And I changed brands, too. I went to Delo. And I've noticed something real funny there, too. You notice my iron levels dropped drastically. I was running it on Senate Synthetic Rotella T.
Okay. I'm just trying to make sure I'm looking at. Now, one of the things you have to remember about iron, and I'm looking, there was a time when your iron was 111, but you had 143,000 miles on the oil.
Yeah, but if you go back through the history, you'll see where, you know, I will have done like my first sample in it, like 50 and 60, you know. Rarely,
yeah, but again,
I've never seen, yeah.
If I match those up, you had 48,000 miles on the oil and 51 for iron. Then you had 70,000 miles on the oil and 86. We're still staying pretty close to that 10 parts for every 1,000 miles. And if we look at your new one, 1,000 miles, you're at 10. Yeah, that's a little bit of an improvement, but not. Remember, we're talking parts per million. So one of the things that can happen is if you take one oil sample plumb full and you take your next oil sample just a quart low, that'll actually change your iron number. And sometimes if it's two quarts low, it'll change pretty drastically. So I wouldn't read too much into that iron. The one thing I'm a little more concerned about is that in just 15,000 miles, your base has dropped really low.
Base has always been pretty low on
it
had, the history.
But now it's even worse. I mean, there was a time when you were at, like I say, 140,000 miles, your base was at 4.5. Now you're at 15,000 miles and your base is at 3.2.
Yeah, and I think that's probably, I went back to the mineral oil, and my oil consumption went down from a gallon every 3,000 to 4,000 miles to, I think I only added 1 gallon in that 15,000-mile sample.
Okay, that will make a difference then. But I'm still wondering why we're dropping base so quick. There doesn't seem to be a real explanation. Your fuel dilution is very low. Your soot is extremely low. We don't have a lot of oil consumption. What we find sometimes is some engines don't cooperate real well with some oils, but there's no downside to this. So all you need to do is make sure we keep the base up. That could either mean drain off a gallon or two and add some, or throw one of the Lubrifiner filters in with some basin.
That's my plan. When I turn the OPS system back on, I'm going to throw a Lubrifiner filter on there to pull that base up.
You just threw in effect, right? The OPS is turned off?
I turned it off while I was looking to figure out this potassium issue. You see the potassium and sodium issue. So I went to mineral oil.
Okay. I want to take one thing at a time. What potassium and sodium issue? I'm missing it. They've never even been flagged.
Well, they haven't been flagged, but they've shown up and I've never seen them before. Does that make sense?
Yes and no. I'm glad you asked. Seeing them means nothing. Nothing whatsoever. We always look at the numbers themselves. There are lots of reasons why sodium and potassium could show up. So so these numbers are nothing at all. So there is no issue with sodium and potassium to worry about. So you didn't need to change oil. It didn't hurt anything to change oil, and you didn't need to turn the OPS. The OPS is being off is probably the reason your base is dropping so fast. The OPS does a great job of getting rid of the liquid contaminants. The liquids, the water, is what combines with the other contaminants to create the acids. The acids are what eat up the base. So when we have the OPS functioning, then the water isn't there, the liquids aren't there, we don't create the acid, and our base holds up much better.
Yeah, that's why I turned the OPS off, is I wanted to see in the sample whether or not I was getting any liquids into my oil, you know, any water or anything. So I just turned it off for the one oil change to basically see, is there water getting in there along with the potassium and sodium, and I didn't see any, I guess, so.
Yeah. Well, let me explain the difference. When we measure for water, we almost never find any. but every single engine running will create water. Just pure condensation alone from the temperature change every single day. You go from a hot engine to a cool engine to a cold engine to a hot engine to a cool engine to a cold engine to a warm engine. You develop condensation. There's no way around it. Without a bypass filter, that condensation degrades the oil fairly quickly. That's why we change our oil all the time. With the OPS, no matter how good your engine is functioning, the OPS will get that condensation out of there. It will never build up to the point where we actually see it as water. So everything you're telling me makes total sense. I understand why you were doing it. Stick with whatever oil you want. I wouldn't even try the filter with the base until you put the OPS, turn it back on, and you may not need those filters with the base. I don't want you to spend any extra money. You may not need it. The OPS may take care of that base issue. Let's see. Let's go to South Carolina. Vic and Sarah, welcome to the program.
Hey, how we doing, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Hey, remember when I was down in Portland and I called you for some advice on that vibration issue?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I went ahead and took that dead axle in the back, which is where they said the vibration was coming from. I put the new tires on, and lo and behold, going down the road, still pulls hard to the right, vibrates all the way from 50. It doesn't matter. You can go up to 70. I tried to figure out a way to lose it. But
okay.
While managing my mileage, I can still pull mid-90s out of, you know.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how much drag I got, how much friction I'm causing, but I let go of the steering wheel and it just right over to the right. I'm watching the front steering.
Let me explain the fuel mileage issue real quick. If we take a truck that is in perfect alignment and we measure the fuel economy, and then we take a truck and we screw up the alignment as bad as you can possibly screw it up, the fuel mileage difference isn't enough to measure.
Oh, that's why I'm baffled right now.
Yep, we do know that we hurt fuel economy by not having the truck aligned. But it's got to be less than 0.2 because it's just too small to measure.
Well, that's why I'm calling you, because I'm just baffled right now. And, you know, Chad's had it twice. And Scotty had it done twice. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, the music's playing. It means I'm out of time. But the other thing I can tell you, and I hate to say this, if Chad's had it, twice. I've talked to you. I'm stumped. Now, what I would like to do is get several of us together. Maybe we could do this on Mike's show, Rolling Toe, the podcast on Sunday night. Maybe we could even do it this weekend on Sunday. Maybe we should make that the topic of the show, get you guys on there and see if we can all brainstorm something together. I'll put you back on hold. Lisa can pick up and we'll see what we can do. Be safe, be profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.